All right. Hey, friends. It is Tim, and it is 11:06 on Thursday, April 23, and I am right now waiting for my sermon to upload for Sunday, and I thought, I've not done a podcast in a while, and I've got some thoughts, and I've been a little bit slower to share my thoughts, because what I'm realizing is this really is a season of formation, and I want to be slow to jump to conclusions on what it is God might be speaking to me and through me, and yet I have some thoughts that I thought, you know, these are worth sharing, because I think these stories, especially the stories of the scriptures, are really helpful in the season we find ourselves. And so the 23rd of April, it is, oh man, we've been in this COVID season now for a few weeks. And if you're like me, when this season started, you had no idea it was going to last this long. And the initial novelty of it all has worn off. The initial, like, oh man, it feels like we're in a movie and I wonder what's going to happen next. That has been replaced by, I have friends who have lost their jobs. I have friends who have legitimately wondered about whether or not they will return to work. I have friends who are about to graduate from high school, college. I mean, I've got friends who have kids who are about to graduate and they're wondering, is there a job for me on the other end of this? I have friends who I have friends who have gotten COVID and other friends who are worried that if they were to get this, they are not sure that they would survive this. Yeah, the novelty has worn off and the reality has set in. And I just recorded a sermon on the desert, and it feels like the best metaphor for what we're feeling right now. But on this podcast, I've gotten some questions from some friends around God's plan or God's will, and is this all part of God's divine plan? Is this all part of God's will, or is this the result of sin or fallenness or brokenness, or is this the result of Satan or the enemy? Really, really heavy questions. And I thought, you know what, I want to share a couple stories from the scriptures that I think get at the answer to this, which, let me just skip to the answer around, like, is this God's plan? Let me tell you my best conclusion, which is, I don't know. I don't know. We don't know. In fact, when you read through the scriptures, there are some weird stories, and they're hard to discern. But at the end of the day, the best we can come to is there is more going on than we understand. So what I want to do is I want to share these stories. I'm going to break them up. I'll share one right now, and then we'll maybe share some others later if these podcasts are helpful. Let me know, because sometimes I feel like I'm just pastoring myself in these moments, which is okay also. But the first story I want to share is a story of a man named Jacob. Maybe you're familiar with the story of Jacob. It's at the beginning of the scriptures, book of Genesis. Jacob is one of the founding fathers of our faith. He's one of the patriarchs. Jacob, you know Jacob? He's the guy who deceives. He's a twin. Since birth, he's in like this rivalry with his twin Esau. And Esau is described as this hunter who has thick red hair and has a bit of a hothead. And then Jacob is this like homebody who loves to cook and stay home. Like, these are the opposites. And the story goes that Esau, after a long season of hunting, comes home and he's starving. And Jacob, who's the cook, he's cooking up a stew, and it's a lentil stew. And if you read it in the original, like in the original Hebrew language, the language that Esau uses when he comes home is, give me the red stuff, the red stuff, the red stuff. I need the red stuff. He's famished, and all he wants is that stew. And Jacob cons him. Jacob essentially says to him, hey, if you sell me your birthright, if you give me your inheritance, land, children, legacy, I'll give you some stew. Esau does it because, I don't know about you, but like I know I often in moments of weakness find myself compromising my deep values, And that's a pretty human moment. And that's Esau's moment. But Esau then realizes what he's done. And he sets out to, essentially, he sets out to kill Jacob. Like, how dare you rip me off like this? And where our story picks up is Jacob is on the run. He's on the run for his life. He's gotten the inheritance. He's gotten the birthright. And at the same time, his brother, the tough brother, Esau, wants him killed. He wants him dead. And so Jacob runs to his uncle's house, a guy by the name of Laban. And he just wants to escape his brother. So he goes to Laban's house. And while he's there, Jacob falls deeply in love with Laban, his uncle Laban's daughter, a gal by the name of Rachel. Which, by the way, for those of you who are doing the math at home, your uncle's daughter is your cousin. I know. I'm just saying like that. Weird, weird. The world's different. The world is different. Anyway, Jacob falls madly. He sees Rachel and he falls madly in love with Rachel. So much so that he makes a deal with his uncle. And he says to his uncle, hey, I will work for you for 7 years if you give me Rachel to be my bride. I want to marry Rachel. I'll do 7 years of hard work if you let me marry Rachel. And so for 7 years, Jacob works hard. And at the end of the 7 years, Jacob is supposed to marry Rachel. Only during the ceremony, Laban, his uncle, pulls a little switcheroo and he covers his other daughter, a gal by the name of Leah. He covers her head with a thick veil and he marries off his daughter Leah to Jacob instead of Rachel. And by the way, I love what the Bible has to say about Leah. It's the only description we're given of Leah, and it's in Genesis 29. Let me read you the description we have of Leah. Oh, Genesis 29, verse 16. Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel was lovely in form and beautiful. So his uncle tricks him, and instead of marrying his attractive cousin, whom he loves, he marries his less attractive cousin, who we are told has weak eyes. He ends up marrying old, weak-eyed Leah, whom he doesn't love. Yeah, this is a bit of like Days of Our Lives meets Tiger King. Yeah. And by the way, you can feel for Jacob, can't you? Right? Like he does his due diligence. He works 7 years. He's good on his end of the bargain. And yet he gets conned. You can feel for Jacob. And even more than that, you can feel for Leah, can't you? I mean, poor girl. She's forced to marry a man who doesn't love her. She's forced to spend the rest of her life with a man who doesn't love her. And Jacob will end up working another 7 years. He will marry Rachel. And for the rest of Leah's life, she will always be second place. In fact, Jacob has 12 kids. He's later renamed Israel, by the way, like the nation. And he has 12 kids who eventually become the 12 tribes of Israel. His favorite kids out of these 12 kids are the kids that come from Rachel, his favorite wife. Leah, his less loved, or perhaps you could say unloved wife, bears 4 kids with Jacob. But you get the sense throughout her life and throughout their life that they're less favored. They're less loved by their dad. Now, here's the detail that's really, really interesting to me. And this, by the way, this detail I missed for years because it's like hidden, but it's brilliant. And once you see it, it shapes so much. Okay, she has 4 kids. Her first son was named Reuben. Her second son, Simeon. Her third son, Levi. Her fourth son, Judah. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. Now you're thinking, why do I care? Okay, here's why I find this fascinating. Does anyone remember who Levi's ancestors become? Levi becomes the father of the Levites, who become the priestly clan. Now, in particular, one Levite is named Aaron, and Aaron has another brother who comes from the tribe of Levi, whose name is Moses. Moses, hear me on this. If Leah would have gotten her way, if Jacob would have gotten his way, there would be, according to church history, Moses writes the law, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. There would be no freedom of the Israelites from Egypt, at least as the story is written. God would have to find another way. If Jacob had gotten their way, there would be no Levi, which means there would be no Moses. Now, she has four kids. It is Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. Okay, now here's where it gets interesting. Judah becomes the ancestor of who? David, and eventually Jesus. So if Jacob would have gotten his way, the entire Bible would have been different. There would be no Moses. There would be no King David and Goliath. There would be no Jesus, at least not in the way that the story is written, because Jesus comes up through the line of Judah. Here's why I tell you this. You see, this is true of our God. Our God can take a situation, a horrible situation. He can take a story of an unloved mother, and our God can turn that situation on its head. Our God can use that situation to give birth to the Savior of the world. The kind of God who can do that can be trusted. Our God can be trusted. There's a verse, it's famously quoted. The verse is out of the book of Romans, and it's written by a guy named Paul. And the verse goes, "In all things, God works to the good of those who trust him. In all things." Now, often this verse gets twisted and misquoted as though God causes all things, even evil things, to get us to trust him. But that's not what the verse says. The verse says that in all things, even horrible things, God works to good. Whether or not God has caused this, that's beyond my pay grade. That is beyond my pay grade. But I can tell you that right now, as plans are falling apart, as our plans for our lives are falling apart, we serve a God who can be trusted. Now, did Leah know how this plan was going to work out in her life? No. In fact, it would take generations to see the implications. This isn't a sugar-coated answer. This is not a warm, fuzzy bow on the end of this. Like, it doesn't necessitate, like, we may not see how our God restores and redeems this. But what I can promise you is that our God is the kind of God who can take, for lack of a better term, the garbage, the crap of our lives. And again, please excuse my language, but I know what some of you are going through, and crap seems a bit light, honestly. God can take the crap of our lives, and he can make beautiful art out of it. And that kind of God can be trusted. Okay, that's one story. We'll tell more stories from the scriptures around this, because I find these stories to be unbelievably helpful when I run out of answers or thoughts. I find these stories to be anchors, and I pray for you often. I think about you all often, and I hope you're doing okay. I hope you're doing okay. Please know that you can reach out if you want to talk. I'm here. Like, I've got more time than ever. I would love to talk. But until we do talk, I do pray for you, and I hope you're doing well. We'll talk again on, if not in person, on the phone, or via podcast soon. Enjoy the rest of this day, friends. Grace and peace.